Okay, so what I'll do is I'll try and keep it to 20 minutes. It's going to be quite whistle-stop. There are some familiar faces in the room, which I'm very pleased to see, and so I know that there will be some new slides that you haven't seen before. So I'm going to try and cover what we do and how we do it, but I use the words impact and accountability a lot in what we do. They're themes that you will see that run through what we talk about, because every charity, really, our focus is to have impact, and particularly delivering that for us means focusing on accountability, because the devil is in the detail. It's not easy to raise money, but it's not where you mess up. You mess up on delivery, on operations, and so that's really where our focus lies. So you guys can read the numbers. I hope you can see the numbers at the back more quickly than I can say them, but I think we'd all understand that malaria is a humanitarian issue. The numbers are pretty frightening. And when I first came across malaria, it was because I heard that 7 jumbo jets full of children under 5 died from malaria every day. And that really struck me. Not only does it particularly affect children under 5, but pregnant women who have a compromised immune system when they're pregnant are also particularly vulnerable. We focus on sub-Saharan Africa because that's where 90% of the cases of malaria and the deaths occur, so that's where we work. But it's not just a humanitarian issue. If you're sick with malaria, then you can't teach, you can't farm, you can't function. And that means you're not a constructive or productive member of society, to put it at that economic level. And so it is a drain on the economy of all of these countries that are affected. So if the humanitarian doesn't get you, it got me, then I hope the economic would get the rest. In that, if we put $1 million into fighting malaria effectively and efficiently, then we will improve the GDP of the country, or the continent, I should say, by $12 million. And so a 12-to-1 return is a pretty good offer I'm going to make to you all if you're not persuaded by the humanitarian element. Unfortunately, there's no silver bullet. There is no vaccine. Lots of research going on, and we all keep our fingers crossed that they'll find something. That, along with gene drive, is a big hope, and we all hope fervently that something comes of it. But for now, it doesn't exist. So to pick up on the under-fives, if I invited you all down to Heathrow Airport, can you turn, I don't know if somebody can turn the lights off here, because I might make the screen easier for people to see. And we saw this twice. I'll come back to this theme of 7 jumbo jets moving to 4 jumbo jets, so we are making progress at the end of the presentation. You know, we'd all say, hang on a minute, this is slaughter. And this is daily, remember. So it is a big issue that we absolutely need to do something about. And a big part of the solution, not the only solution, but a big part of the solution, is nets. They cost $2, they protect 2 people, and therefore, given that the female mosquito that is pregnant and wants to reproduce needs a blood meal to reproduce, bites between 10 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock in the morning, that is something terrific we have on our side. It means that we can cover people when they sleep, and we can protect them mechanically, but because these nets are covered with insecticide, as you will understand, we're putting nets in very challenging environments. So they're households, they're not houses. And so inevitably these nets become ripped, they become torn, they have holes in them. But because the mosquitoes don't do a red arrows maneuver through a hole, they land on the net and migrate to the hole, and they pick up insecticide, it causes knockdown, kills them. So that structure of 10 o'clock, if you like, or the feeding time between, generally, typically, between 10 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock in the morning is a really good characteristic that we can exploit here. And the impact is dramatic. So we're talking about whether it's 600 nets or 1,000 nets or 400 nets, it depends on the malaria burden. But we're talking about, you know, low thousands of dollars equals one death averted. And broadly, it's 1,000 cases of malaria prevented for every person that dies, the mortality to morbidity ratio. So this is an extraordinary impact. And graphically, that's what we see. We see, prior to putting nets in place, you have the top graph, the seasonality, rainy seasons and dry seasons, happens more or less immediately, so within weeks. It requires, it's not as easy as just handing out nets and saying, right, we're done. Education is involved and there's sustained effort, but broadly speaking, any major health initiative where you'd have a 10% decline nationwide is dramatic. So if we can introduce 40, 50%, you can see this is in the sensational category of what we can achieve. So just a minute or so on how I started. Habiba described a little bit of how we got going. I shamelessly called 250,000 of my best friends and said, would you like to swim? And they all said yes. In fact, the truth is that I failed because I was trying to get 1 million people to swim, but I'm not going to count that as true failure, really. And very much the spirit behind this was, as I said to Michael Phelps, I should say to Mr. Phelps, because he's not a mate of mine, but he very kindly agreed to sort of support this, as many other people did. And I said to Michael, what I'd like you to do in front of the cameras is say, I would like you to swim, and it doesn't matter how fast I swim, when I swim, I count as one person. And if you swim, you count as one person as well. And very much the spirit behind what we do at AMF is it's sort of we're all ordinary folks. It's sort of very grassrootsy in that I don't think this is about celebrity, it's about all of us. Because if a lot of people, as we've seen over the last 10 years with crowdfunding and these sort of things, I mean, it's almost the power of all the ordinary folk that can get things done. And that was very much the spirit, and it is today, behind what we do at AMF. And so there were some wonderfully nutty people swimming as part of World Swim against malaria in 2005 in the Serpentine, not far from where we are now. A whole bunch of people at PwC that decided to go into the channel, and then some very sensible people in Australia and America where it was warmer. And it was particularly important to me that there were lots of children involved, given the death toll is particularly affecting children. And this was my first experience, if you like, of... Well, actually, it was the second experience after a swim for a burns victim. But it was I learned a lot from this experience of how people reacted to certain, you know, communications I had with them, inviting people to get involved. So it was a sort of seminal period, if you like. And I was intending to go back and get a proper job because I'd taken 2 years off to launch World Swim. And when we went to see the Global Fund, an organization based in Geneva, big funder, they said, do you realize with 130,000 people swimming, which is what we had at the time, you are the largest malaria advocacy group in the world? And I said, are you telling me that 20 phone calls out of the back room of my home in London has created the world's single largest advocacy group for the world's single largest killer of children? And they said, yes. And I said, well, that's shame on all of us if that's the case. And I guess that meant that I didn't want to go back into a proper job. I wanted to do an improper job. So what we do at AMF is we provide nets, we distribute them, we make sure that they don't get stolen. That's potentially a very big issue, back to operations. We certainly want to ensure they're used, and when we get involved in funding nets, we go to governments and we talk to them about data. In fact, we put it a lot more politely than I'm going to put it now, but we basically say to governments, please don't ask us to trust you, because we won't. But we won't ask you to trust us either. Let's just focus on the data. And that is really important in making sure that we do the best job we possibly can. We don't always get it right. We're not perfect. And things do happen we have to dive in and try and solve, as I'll come on to. But in essence, this is all about data for us operationally. So when we started, again, more politely than I'm about to put it, but I went to a whole bunch of people and organizations and said, please, will you help me, but I'm not going to pay you, because you don't need $5 more than a couple of kiddies in Africa need a bed net. And I'm delighted to say that everybody I spoke to, I can't think of anybody who didn't say to the question, who do I talk to in your industry that would help, be able to help me do X, Y, and Z? And the response was me. And it's incredibly humbling getting a lot of people in big companies. I mean, I run this with six other people out of the back room of my house in London, and everybody works from their own homes. So we don't have any offices. But there are a lot of blue chip companies that said, we get it, we'll support you. Because fundamentally, the chief executive of big company X and big company Y, he or she, you know, have got kids and they know kids and, you know, it's their human beings. And so I guess I appealed to that. How do we do this together as a lot of people coming together? We have 5 full-time staff. We pay 4 of them. And so one of the things that's a little bit different about what we do is I don't have to really go out and raise money to fund admin costs. I could. And I could certainly use the money we have to do that, but as you can imagine, we want to spend the money on nets. So I have 4 costs globally, centrally, and no other costs. And they are the 4 salaries, the 4 people we pay a commercial salary to. We have no banking, accounting, legal, website, translation, you name it, we don't have it. You know, when we wanted to, you know, translate the website into German, you know, the thinking was we go to a, you know, professional company and they'll charge us, you know, $5,000 to do it. Or we could go to a lot of other human beings and say, you're a professional translator. Who do we talk to in your industry such that we could get 4 people who would translate 2,500 words each? That's 10,000 words. We can now put our website in a language and show people the courtesy in Germany of being able to read the website in their own language. And I sent out 48 emails, not dear all, because that doesn't work, but dear Claudia and dear Klaus and dear Matthew and so on. And in 24 hours, I had 44 positive responses out of 48. So I could have translated the website 11 times over for free, and the same thing happened in every other language. And so, you know, you sort of want to jump up and kiss people when that happens, because it's terrific that everybody said, we'll help. And that, in a sense, is really behind what we've all built at AMF. We have very low overheads as a result, as you'll be unsurprised to hear if we're only paying, you know, full salaries. So our overheads last year, or FY 2017, I should say the year before last now, I should update this slide, were 0.6% of the money we received. So 99.4% of what comes in goes to the front line. And that's because I am incredibly cynical about charity, which is why people say people like me set them up. And I want to keep those costs really low down, and I want to show people exactly what happens with their money, because I think that's the right thing to do. We work with co-funding partners because we can't fund everything ourselves. And in fact, we often fill gaps. So somebody will say to us, we need $11 million here, have you got any money? And then we can cooperate with another organization. And we work with distribution partners because I don't want to set up some massive logistical operation in a whole series of countries. That would be daft. So this is very much us contributing as one of a number of organizations, because this is a big team effort. It has to be. So impact and accountability are important. Transparency and efficiency are very important to us. I guess transparency is different from, but it goes hand in hand with accountability. Efficiency covers not just the money we receive, but how we actually get nets out to people in the right quantities to protect them. Our impact, I think a charity should be able to define in a sentence or in a few words what it is they're trying to achieve. It surprises me when some can't. In our situation, it's very simple. We want to stop people dying and stop people falling sick. And so that, in essence, is the metric we must be judged by, although I'm going to throw something out there that we actually don't publish malaria case rate data, and there might be some questions on that later on as to, well, why, if AMF is focusing on these metrics, aren't they publishing the metrics as to what they're achieving? It's a source of frustration, but it's something that I think is important. So accountability for us means holding people to account in country. So saying to our partners, we want to see data. So we structure our relationships so that it focuses on data. And we think fundamentally what that does is it means that fewer people die and fewer people fall sick. And we want to hold ourselves accountable to our donors and show, as I mentioned, where every donation goes. So people can be engaged rather than, I've given them some money, it's gone into a black box, don't know what's happened to it. That, for me, would be frustrating. And we believe that leads to this virtual circle of driving donations, because we cannot do anything without donations. Awareness is terrific, but awareness funds nothing. Awareness has to have an end point of moving onto driving donations. So for donors, we have donors have their own individual page, as long as we have their email address, and we list all their donations. And I say, as long as we have their email address, not as a cute way of saying, goody, then we can market to them, because we as an organization do no marketing. We may be making mistakes in not doing marketing. In a sense, other people market for us. The effective altruism community has been sensational, in a sense, in marketing us, and is a fundamental board member of AMF in terms of, you know, what it has helped us to achieve. We never send soliciting emails. We only send informational emails. It's really, really important to us, because I think what we do should drive our support, not our ability to persuade because we write good copy. When we go out into the field, we take enough nets to cover everybody in a particular area, and the ratio is broadly two people sleep under a net. In fact, at scale, it's 1.8. And what we focus on is making sure that we visited, or our partners have visited, every household, so we understand whether this household needs 3, 2, 4, 1, whatever the number of nets they need, that's the number of nets we get to them. We make sure at the moment of distribution, and I should say there are a number of things we do to verify and ensure that that data is accurate. It's not perfect, but we can send 5 data collectors out after the first 100 and get them to visit 5% of the households these guys visited and tell them beforehand, so we're putting psychology to play, to make sure they're really focusing on getting accurate data. And there are other things we do to make sure that data is good, because obviously garbage in, garbage out. And people, I'm afraid, a very small number, do want to subvert what we're trying to do and misappropriate nets. It's important to have independent supervision at the moment of distribution so that, again, you make sure the right things happen. We follow nets and their presence and use and condition after 6 months, roughly 6 months. It's now sometimes 9 months afterwards. And we track malaria case rate data, albeit there are issues with the purity, if you like, of that data or the reliability of it. So when we go back in and gather data, we're doing it not just because it makes us feel good, but because we do want to understand what the decline curve is. Because if we're up at 95% here after, on day one, and we come down like this over 3 years, well, you know, that's okay, but that's not okay. And if we don't know, we can't do anything about it, and we do not want to bury our heads in the sand. So I have no problem in saying after 18 months, the coverage with our nets is down to 40%, because I'd rather know and be able to say to everybody, so we need to do something about it, because for the next 18 months, we've got a significant number of people that we're telling everybody we're protecting from malaria, and we're not. So let's find the data. That latter curve is not one we see often, but we need to know whether it is there or not. And we can say to the district health officer, you've got 37 health center catchment areas, and you've got limited resources, and we've got this data of where sleeping spaces are covered and not, and so you can focus on these 10 areas rather than the 37 and actually be more impactful, more effective with your work. So we're not just collecting data for data's sake. We're very happy to be held to account by others and release all of our material. There's almost nothing we won't release apart from people's personal salaries and things like that. And that's obviously been of terrific benefit to us as you know, we've been reviewed well. That has been a major driver of the donations we've received. I don't know what the current percentage is, but it's something like 70% of the donations or 60% of the donations we can tie to GiveWell and other organizations' reviews of us. So that's massive. So take 60% of 178 million, you know, we're looking at about $100 million that has been driven by the EA community. So AMF is an EA community thing, really, as much as it is, you know, any of us that work at AMF. So last year we received about 90,000 donations from 190 countries, so we're getting to lots of people. And every donation matters, because every $2 buys a net, and it means that when we talk to countries that say, hi, Rob, you got $11 million, we say, we've got eight. But then the next week we've got 8.2 and 8.4, so we can literally, through the discussions, come back and up the number of nets we can fund. So we put nets to, we put money to work, in essence, as soon as it comes in, because I can't commit to nets unless I've got the money. So the three key numbers we often, if people are sort of benchmarking, you know, what does it cost to do something in the world of malaria, it's $2 buys a net, $500 protects a village, and roughly $3,000 prevents a death, or 4,000 or 5,000. I don't know what the latest number is from GiveWell, which is where that comes from. On top of that, we have a small number of large donors that build on top of what, in essence, is this, that, you know, the likes of most of us or all of us in the room, the many individual donors that's our lifeblood. These are very lumpy donations. We've had some very significant ones. You know, when you get a $23 million donation, you go like that. I mean, that's amazing, because it just means we can say to a country, we can fund 12 million nets for you. And when we're funding larger quantities of nets, we can hope to achieve greater success in some of the things we're aspiring to, which I'll come on to. So some fantastic big donations. And I hope, I guess if there's one thing I want to leave somebody with hearing me and looking at this slide, is that if ever somebody were to ask, somebody's given $2 million, what does my $2 matter? Well, the answer is your $2 buys a net. And that matters. It just so happens that, you know, $1 million buys 500,000, but we need both. And if we didn't have all of us contributing small amounts, we wouldn't be here, because no big donations would come in on the back of a few people giving a few dollars. So these are inextricably linked. So over the last few years, we've started to hit the tens of millions of dollars, and that means we can fund millions of nets. You know, the work we've all, everybody who's involved, you know, all the donors, all the supporters, everybody that is involved, together we have, you know, we can say that we're putting ourselves in a position to stop something like 60,000 people dying, preventing 660 million cases of malaria through the number of nets funded. And whilst we have operated in 36 countries, we focus typically on about seven in any 1 year. Home straight now. So this means that we can fund millions of nets at a time and say to countries, rather than turning up at the table and saying, yes, we can fund 100,000 nets, where they would say, terrific-ish, because they need 10 million. If we turn up and say we can fund five of your 10 million, we get listened to. And I think rightly so. And so we don't turn up and say, this is how you're going to do it, because that would be insensitive, crass, just not a good way of going about things. So we come forward and say, here's our draft agreement, here's the focus on data. You let us know what's difficult, and let's work with you as to how we adjust it. But some things we're going to be pretty difficult to move on, because it's all about accountability, and we think there's sense behind them. And so we're involved in a partnership and persuading. And the more money we have, the more we can do that. And so things have radically changed in the last 4 years, really, with what we can achieve. But we have challenges, and most of those challenges, I'm not expecting you to read the bottom bullet point. The point is that they are many, and I could go on forever, because the devil is in the detail. But the big ones are ensuring effective planning, where you've got limited resources and your span of control is limited. Classic stuff. And so, you know, we're improving all the time. We don't get everything right, but we think we get things more right as each day, each week, each month goes by. And we're in the business of persuading people to do things, because that's what partnerships are all about. We're also in the business of sometimes managing or doing a two-step tango around the politics that suddenly can appear in certain situations in the countries we operate in. Managing millions of household records, which is what we do, is the relatively easy bit. You put 150 lovely people in a room, you say, here's a laptop, here's some data, and we provide them with our data entry system, and we get the data so we can see it. So there's no filter. Really, really important, but I won't bang on about that. Insecticide resistance is a second challenge. Charles Darwin told us that would happen, and certainly it has, and it happens with all of these things. And so what we have done is we've played our part in saying we need to put these new PBO nets. You'll all remember from your chemistry O level, of course, that PBO stands for piperonyl butoxide. Yes, everybody remembers that? It's a synergist that goes on the top of a net or on a net, and it switches off the resistance mechanism in a mosquito, which means that the pyrethroid kills it. And we've stepped forward and funded 6 million of those, distributed in 2017, lots and lots of clusters for the statisticians in the room, so that we can actually have a very powerful study, a randomized controlled trial, the gold standard, if you like, so that for the rest of the malaria community, the funding community and others, we can say, here's the data that tells us whether PBO nets are good, and if they are, in what way and in what circumstances. And we'll have those results in about 6 months' time. We don't know them. We are the funder, we are the sole funder of the study. And in a sense, we were a bit surprised that others weren't going to step forward, but nobody did. So we said, we'll do it, because this is important. So insecticide resistance is a challenge to be met. The next challenge is funding. We're allocating about $50 million at the moment. And we have $200 million worth of requests. So we have to make some nasty, nasty decisions in the next 3 months, where we will have to say to countries, we don't have the money. But we will do our best to try and make sure that the money we do deploy goes to, you know, optimize the impact we can have. But that challenge is also an opportunity, because there are lots of countries that need help. And so, you know, we don't, you know, turn up in the morning and think, you know, all these challenges are weighing us down. These are opportunities for us to help. And we tend now to look at anything between 2 and 20 million nets of requests a time. So some of the numbers are quite chunky. So we have to really make sure that the partnerships and the agreements we put in place are going to deliver what we expect it to deliver. We tend to look 3 years out now, because that matches with other funders and means we can really plan operationally much better. We also have an opportunity with technology, and this is one of my favorite pictures. It shows in one of the poorest countries in the world, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the use of technology, smartphones, to demonstrate to within 6 meters where 250 odd thousand households are located that receive nets. And when you do stuff like this, you've got real-time data, you've got a better accountability, you've got lower costs, you know, yada, 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 yada. The list goes on. So fantastic opportunity to do better. But there are challenges with deploying it, because you can't just put thousands of phones into the DRC and expect it all go well. So we have to be very careful how we do this. I'm going to leave you, last slide, on a note of optimism, which is if we reflect on what we've done in the last 15 years within the malaria community, all of us together, it's pretty dramatic in bringing down over 15 years the number of deaths and cases of malaria by about 60%. And there are countries that have moved into elimination. Malaria's gone now. Sri Lanka, you know, it's a very challenged country. The Tamils, war, all sorts of challenging things going on, but they are now malaria-free. 3 years of no native case of malaria, that's terrific. And there are now 8 other countries, I think, on the cusp of that. So elimination is possible, eradication is possible, but a child still dies from malaria every minute. So while I've been talking, depending on how long I've been talking, 22 kiddiewinks have not made it, and that's pretty shocking. So as we know what we need to do, which is NETs, we don't have a silver bullet with a vaccine, we don't have a silver bullet with gene drive technology yet. NETs is a big part of what we do. So certainly from our part, and with others' help, we're going to continue to do as much as we can. Thank you very much.
We've got about half an hour more for questions from the audience. So for a start, you can start adding, I know some of you have already started adding questions on the BizaBoo app. So if you go to the poll section of the app, then you can select the AMF one and just and type in your question in the bit where it says write your answer. So we've already started getting some through. So just to start, if I can just start with some of the, if you could explain a bit more of the detail about like specifically how your operations kind of work. So in terms of the nets that you distribute, someone's asked, do you distribute kind of nets that are manufactured outside the local outside that country, or are they manufactured there?
So the nets are manufactured broadly in Asia. So the three dominant countries of manufacture are China, Thailand, and Vietnam. There is also a factory in Tanzania, and there may be other factories sort of coming online in several other countries, and there might be one that's come online in, I think, Ethiopia and Nigeria, we're looking at it. Effectively, nets are a textile, and so economies of scale are key, and therefore there are relatively few plants that produce 80,000 nets a day or more, because it's just not economic to put small manufacturing facilities, one in each country, which would be great for transport and logistics and local economies and employment if you could do that, but it just doesn't work. And so the fiduciary duty I have, if you like, is if I'm looking to spend $1 million, do I spend $1 million on funding nets in from a facility in Africa, there is one, that is gonna charge me, because of reasons of economy of scale, 20% more, or do I buy 20% more nets and protect 20% more people? And the latter has to be my responsibility. I'm not here to employ people. I'm here to protect people from malaria. However, when there's a very narrow gap, then we can make judgment calls. But broadly, those are the locations of the nets. They're brought in, and it costs roughly $2 a net and about 20 cents a net to ship a net. So it's about 10% of the cost. It used to be $5 a net, and so that shipping cost has become a larger proportion, but that's still the way the operations, the production works.
Mm-hmm. And so I suppose following on from that, so thinking about, do you try and measure or think about the impact beyond just immediately kind of saving people's lives? So, for example, the knock-on effects that has to their economy and to like the other lives that they then affect in kind of, you know, in the next kind of 10, 20 years. Is that something that you think about at all?
I mean, no and yes. No in terms of in the decisions we make each day is where can we protect the most people over the next 3 years with these nets. We're cognizant of the fact that, you know, if you've got people that are not sick, as I mentioned, you know, they can function and they can lead healthier lives, and you can transform fundamentally the health of a community, because if you protect people with nets, you're reducing the people in the blood pool, you know, the blood pool that's infected. So when a non-malaria carrying mosquito bites the person who is now not infected, you know, it's annoying and they'll bite somebody else, but they're not transmitting, they're not acting as a vector. So we're aware of the impact it has at the micro level within a community, the macro level within a country, but really our day-to-day focus is more, you know, more pragmatic and prosaic, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
And do you think that there might be if organisations like GiveWell or so on, like started to look at those longer-term impacts, do you think that they might be able to start measuring some of those longer-term things, even if they're not your immediate focus?
Whether they can start measuring them, I don't know. That's probably more for, you know, experts within their organisation. But it would probably be of benefit in terms of our own, mm-hmm. you know, sort of statistics, because there is a dramatic economic impact, not mm-hmm. just the health impact.
Okay. Cool, thanks for that. So another kind of question, there's some questions around kind of donations and things. So I just wanted to, because I get to ask you questions, I get to like nip in mine as well. I just wanted to check, so if people are interested in donating, do you have a preference or around people kind of donating little and often out of their pay packets, or groups of people getting together and pooling donations, or saving now and donating more later? Do you have a particular preference around any of that kind of thing?
So in reverse order, donate now rather than later, because we've got massive gaps. I suppose we would prefer people to. We have no method preference per se, or because we don't want to frighten anybody off by saying they want me to give online, and I don't really want to do that. I'd rather give by bank transfer. So we're agnostic when it comes to that perspective. We do like recurring donations. It's something that I look at really closely because I think it acts as a bellwether. It acts as a, you know, there's an element of, you know, are we seeing recurring donations falling away? Is that saying something about people thinking, I think I've done my bit, I'm going to do something elsewhere? So if somebody was thinking of giving, you know, £12, would I prefer £12 now or a pound a month? I'd probably prefer a pound a month.
Okay.
Because this also is the long game. This is not something where we're, you know, after money now. Despite my prior comment, if somebody's thinking about whether they're recurring or not, you know, recurring is, that sort of shows, I think it also shows a more considered view that I'm not just going to give 50 bucks. I'm actually going to give 20 bucks a month because I'm probably not going to cancel it in 3 months' time. Mm-hmm. So, and there was one other part of that question I missed, I think.
So one of the things that people do in the community is pool money together into, like, EA funds and things like that. Is that preferred to people donating individually?
Individually, much better, simply because, going back to the point I made about trying to connect individual donations to a distribution. So if somebody's given us $50, we can say your $50 have bought 25 nets that have gone to these, you know, this, you know, area of Uganda, I think is more, we hope, more energizing and engaging than collectively we raised, you know, $1,000 from 50 people and we funded something here. It's we can only attach one email to a donation. And so therefore I'm only engaging one person, whereas I'd like to engage all 50. Mm-hmm. But again, we'd prefer the donation of funds rather than not. So we
And I suppose are you thinking about those 50 people and wanting to give them a better connection? And if those 50 people don't mind and are happy to give it to you and trust you, does that make a difference? And you wouldn't mind not connecting it with the individual 50?
I mean, whatever comes to us. I mean, you know, it's opportunities like this, and people ask us questions when we put them on our blog and so on, in terms of, you know, how do you mm-hmm. prefer? I think in some ways it's probably a refined level of thought, because at the top level we need to persuade people, well, why should I give to this charity? And if you've got energetic people that are going to, you know, group people together and say, hey, why don't we do a fundraiser or do something, then that's terrific. That's also another pebble in the pond in the sense, because people getting involved will, you know, it'll spread to their friend groups and networks and so on.
Okay, so that was, so donate now rather than later, recurring rather than like in a lump sum, and individually rather than like pooled, is AMF's preference, if you wanted to know. So. Yeah. So we've got a question from someone around, what relations do you have with the Bill Gates Foundation, who are also involved in fighting malaria?
Effectively none, in the sense that we don't have sort of active connections. I chose not to go either to friends and family or big organisations when I started AMF, because I didn't want people saying, oh, what's he doing now? We'll give him 50 quid. And I didn't want to tap into money that already existed. I really wanted to get, you know, a whole set of people like me who really didn't know anything, you know, as much as I felt could be known about malaria. Mm-hmm. So we've not gone to the Gates Foundation and said, hi, would you give us, you know, tens of millions? I think that they know of us. I mean, I'm aware of that. I was in a room with Mr. Gates recently, but one of 500 people, so there's nothing special there. you know, whether or not, and there have been sort of, you know, connections along the way. The chair of my malaria advisory group was a guy called Professor Sir Brian Greenwood, and Brian was also the chair of the director of the Gates Malaria Partnership in London, and three of our malaria advisory group members also were chairpersons of Gates Malaria Centres in Africa, and one of our trustees advised Bill Gates Sr. when they were setting up the Gates Foundation. So we have connections, but we've not exploited them, because I think what we're about is new money.
Okay, and I suppose that's the money side of it. Is there also the expertise and the knowledge side of things about working that could be beneficial to work together?
They tend to work in research rather than product, which is what we are. So, and there have been connections, and I have spoken with, you know, senior people at the Gates Foundation over the years, but it's been swapping ideas and notes on things. So that does happen.
Okay. Do keep your questions coming in. We'll have maybe roving mics in just a second after I've got through all of the things that I really want to ask. no, don't worry. I will give you a chance to ask your questions. But just following on from that point, I suppose. So So you say that you work with the Department for International Development, the UK government, as like a collaborator. I mean, have you, again, around the sort of the funding point, is there ever a possibility, or are you interested in the governments actually funding your work?
Yes, in the sense that pragmatically, I could use $150 million now that I don't have. Mm-hmm. So if somebody came forward and said, we'd like to talk to you seriously about that, we'd be straight there. Mm-hmm. And even though that's not new money, that's just a sort of pragmatic response to, it is also an objective. I think we feel that we are a good funder of NETS. Mm-hmm. I think there are some less good funders of NETS. I mean, I could get myself into dodgy territory here, so I'll be careful what I say. But I think that we bring an attention to data and accountability mm-hmm. that sometimes other organisations don't have as their specific focus. Mm-hmm. Is that quite...
diplomatic.
So I think that, we back ourselves. So, if somebody said... we give you this much money, can you spend it on NETS? We'd say, yes, but I'll tell you what, hold on to the money. We'll put that program in place, knowing that you're committed, right? And they'll go, yes. And we'll say, right, okay, so don't give us the money. We'll go and put it in place and get it all ready to go. And then we'll come back and say, now there's no risk to you. Here you go, evaluate that, now give us the money. Mm-hmm. We would be, and at the moment, I think my focus is increasingly on how do we increase the volume and quantity of donations, and also some of the really big donations. Because I think if I'm going to try and do my best, or we're all going to try and do our best to fill that $150 million gap, if I can phrase it that way, then I have to have some really, really big donations come in. So that's something I'm thinking a lot about at the moment. Mm-hmm.
And do you think that there is like an actual responsibility for governments to be actually doing some of this work, or are you happy for it to be a kind of a third sector kind of thing to be doing?
Agnostic, in that, at the end of the day, as fast as we can, we need to make sure that $5 billion a year is made available to malaria, and it's only $5 billion a year. I mean, financial crisis and billions talked about here, there, and everywhere, it's a tiny amount of money for the number of people that die and the, lack of productivity. So I don't care where it comes from. I mean, our plan B, we have in AMF a plan B, and it's to close, and I want to do that as fast as I can, mm-hmm. not just to see more of my four kids, but because, then I'd be an unbelievable hypocrite if I wanted AMF to keep going, because I want to see malaria gone. There are plenty of other things to, work on. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we want to see money coming from wherever it comes. The reality is it's not coming from governments. Mm-hmm. Or rather, all of the money at the moment is coming from governments. And in 2017, the four biggest funder of NETS were the Global Fund, about $500 million, the British government, the American government, in one order or another, and then AMF, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, we need to try and tap into that wall of money that I passionately believe exists within, our communities. And I think the greatest barrier to it, frankly, is accountability. I think there's massive cynicism of, if I give money to a charity operating in Africa, where's it going to go? And I think that's a valid concern, hence my cynicism. And boy, if I was cynical when I started AMF, 14 years ago, boy, am I cynical now, given what I've seen, which, it's just why we do what we do the way we do it.
So tell me more, what's the cynicism that you've kind of developed over the last 14 years then?
I've seen many, many cases of benign incompetence all the way through to malign corruption mm-hmm. at staggering levels.
Like an example?
No.
Okay.
Nice try.
Okay, his lips are sealed.
Nice try. I want to stay out of jail.
I'm very intrigued. Sort of moving a little bit away from like the donation side of things then, one person has asked, apart from donations, how else can people contribute to AMF's mission?
That's a good question.
Good question.
I suppose what Julian and I should do, Julian is sitting just in the row here, he'll wave. He's been with us for a year as operations manager, is we need to, and Julian runs the volunteer program, which we need to do, we need to work out how we can, do even better at taking the fantastic offers we get from people saying, look, how can I help with our time? Mm-hmm. So that's one answer to your question and expertise, is that I suppose there are specific ways in which we approach volunteering and say, because that's in a sense where I'm headed, is that if you've got expertise or connections with people, I mean, I'm shameless. I mean, if my favorite dinner party would be three of the 170, I think it's 170, people in the world that have assets of $10 billion or more. And I'd like to sit down with three of them at dinner and say, just give me the interest on the money. That's all I want, because there's only so many 100-meter yachts you people can buy. please don't repeat that. But in that way, we would, you know, that's leverage. Three of you could save God knows how many people and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But apart from that, you know, we need to redesign our website. I mean, it's we all internally, although there's a huge amount of talent that's gone into it, it's, you know, it's way out of date, it's not responsive, you know, we sort of cringe at it. And so what I would like is a really big, you know, website designy company to come forward and say, great, here's your team, Rob, all for free. Because we do things for free, right? And then we redesign it, and we get another group of people who say, you've got expertise, we don't. How do we keep this, 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 and this, but generate a fantastic website that's responsive so that, you know, how do we... Another thing I'd throw out there is where, you know, we need help, but it's very pragmatic to AMF's needs, if you like, because we have to be focused on what, you know, we're trying to deliver, and then fold in volunteers so that they can do things that excite them and they're good at. So we have to marry those two things up. I would like to try and get 1 million people to give me one net each, and only one net each. They're not allowed to give us more. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to, you can go over here. But this bit of the project is 1 million people giving me a net in a way that, you know, so when Julian gives a net, he can come back 10 days later and see, wow, five other people get a net. It's pyramid selling, but it's sophisticated. And then there's more down here, and he can see that, wow, there are 42,000 nets that have been given as a result of the net I gave and the five emails I sent, or the three, or the two, or the one. Now, I don't know who to talk to about that. So if there's anybody who knows the senior people at Google and Facebook and wherever we get those together again, say, how do you guys make that happen? You must be able to do that in about 3 weeks. And that'll be 1 million nets and 2 million people protected. So it's the help we get is we're always really interested in getting people writing to us and saying, how can I help? And we've now got a series of questions where we say, what are you good at? What do you want to do? How much time have you got? Etc. So we can put up, you know, we have a database running, so we can then sort of work out how do we not get lots of time sucked into volunteer management, because that can be a real danger, but we can, you know, we can focus people on helping.
So it sounds like it's partly individuals who have those skills can get in touch and sort of ask to help. But is it also that people who work at big corporations can try and get in touch with you and leverage the expertise in that organisation?
Yeah, and we might say to somebody, you know, is there a consulting team that over the next 3 months, and often it's the time thing, because people have got jobs, they're earning money, they're paying the rent. So they can't just say, I can do something for 3 weeks. You know, sometimes there are people in that position, but in the next 3 months, could you guys take on, and we would liaise with them, a study to work out what are the top new types of net on the market that we might have missed and so on, and do a research project and come back with us. And what we try and do is identify people who are totally self-driven. So our management time doesn't get sucked into it because there are only seven of us. Mm-hmm. So they then go away and say, got it, we'll be back to you in. And every 4 weeks we have a conversation and they deliver something that we go, that's terrific. We can now use that. And there are lots of examples of that where, you know, we try and involve people as best we can, helping with the mission.
Cool. Okay, so we've got about 6 minutes left. I'm just going to open it up to the floor. Do people want to put your hands up if you have a question, and we'll get a roving mic over to talk to you?
Gentleman here, first hand up that I saw.
There we go.
Yes, I saw an article a couple of months ago about new nets with a combined sort of approach, or combined chemical and something to do with growth regulation. And that affects the growth of mosquitoes or...
Okay.
I was wondering if that had... there have been developments with that since, and whether the nets have changed, or that's something that you focus on?
I don't know is the answer. I mean, the PBO net is a combined net in terms of two chemicals trying to have a particular impact. There are a number of different types of nets that are now coming onto the... are being tested. They're not on the market because they have to go through something called HOOPES, the WHO Pesticide Evaluation Scheme. A bit like the FDA in America, where it's got to be tested. You can't put a baby underneath a net with insecticide on it unless it's been fully tested. And by the way, a baby could lick 2 square meters of net And get a mild tummy ache. You know, so obviously these things are tested. So there are different things that are being brought to bear to try and to try and solve the problem of resistance rather than greater efficacy. They're fantastically effective as long as resistance isn't an issue. So I don't have, back to my volunteering thing. We need somebody to go away and help the team by working that, briefing us. Okay. Gentleman here.
Hey, you said you spend £0 on marketing, is that right? Given a lot of advertising agencies can demonstrate their effectiveness of their campaigns, quite similarly, you had $1 million spent can save about $12 million for a country's or a local economy. That's about the same ratio as the John Lewis Christmas advertising campaign.
Yeah.
And so is there not a bit of an ethical dilemma in not spending money on marketing and advertising, given that you could get more money if you knew you did it?
I think it's not an ethical dilemma. It's a sort of commercial one. You know, if I put my commercial hat on as to how do I spend $1 million that somebody gives me? Do I buy $1 million worth of nets? I think the way we've come out at AMF is that I think we're getting into some tricky territory. I mean, if we were to announce to you that we were spending $5 million over Christmas on a marketing campaign, I think there would some people that would go, really? And the problem with advertising is that 50% is effective. The problem is, which 50%? So the way we prefer to look at marketing in the most general thing is that let's put in front of people what we do and how we do it and the results we have. And hopefully that will encourage people to support what we do. If somebody from an advertising firm said, we're prepared to put together a marketing campaign for you and do it all for free, here's a case team, and we've got $1 million budget, are you interested? I'd say maybe, rather than yes. Because it depends on the nature of the marketing. Because I think one of the things that we value at AMF is if somebody gave me $1 billion tomorrow, I couldn't spend it all. You know, there's a capacity issue. So our growth has been managed in a way. I mean, boy, it took 8 years to flipping well get there. But, and now we're at the stage where we could scale and we could take $150 million easily. So I would be interested in an advertising campaign, but we're not about celebrities, and there's this back to this grassroots thing. I think celebrities, they're interested for a while and they go, and I think that can often be disempowering. It can obviously be empowering because it gets the message out. If Oprah Winfrey said, look, I'm interested in supporting you, Rob, what can I do? I think we'd be really interested in having a conversation, but there's an element of, maybe I'm mistaken, and I'm not a marketer, is that I feel there's a sort of, I don't like the word brand associated with AMF. At AMF, we're sort of quite family, we're quite grassrootsy, we want to try and engage as many people we have, but we just want to get on with the job and do it as well as we can. And I think that's hopefully the best way that will allow us to expand. And maybe, as Habiba says, DFID will come to us and say, look, you've got a track record now operationally. We'd like to talk to you about big dollars to see how, make the case to us. Maybe we should give you some money. I think that's more the way we put our limited hours than thinking about getting, I'm being pejorative, getting sucked into a marketing side of it. But we're not completely closed to it. And we're actually dealing with something at the moment with, do we A-B test something? And we're even, we've got free stuff given to us and we're even sort of sitting here going, ooh, do we want to do this? So we probably need somebody to advise us because we're, not very good in this area. Sorry, that's a rather inadequate response, but.
Let's squeeze in one more question if we can.
Lady over here.
Hi, I'm quite interested in AMF's monitoring and evaluation. It's so exceptional. Why do you think that most NGOs actually don't do monitoring and evaluation well? And is there anything that you can advise other NGOs with different types of programs in low-income countries to do monitoring and evaluation better?
I think there are three things. Firstly, it can be expensive. Secondly, it can be difficult and time-consuming. And I think there's attitude as well. So I think that many start with the attitude that they don't want to do no monitoring and evaluation, but they don't want to do much because it requires effort and time. And so surely the best thing is just get 10 million nets out to the country, and even if some of them get stolen and so on, well, hey, look, like seeds being cast, they'll cover most people right. And my answer to that, to one of the in her comments or the questions Habiba tried to answer, is that I've heard of, and I've heard on very good authority, no AMF nets, tens of thousands, and in one case, 1.4 million nets being stolen and sold to another country, which means that the 2 million people that were going to be protected with those 1.4 million nets, they didn't get any nets. Nobody was coming in afterwards. And so I think monitoring is really important to stop these sorts of things happening. But a lot of organizations think, you know, there are so many challenges we have already. If we're going to do monitoring in this way, then we're going to have a team of people doing it. There's money involved. And so I think generally things focus on the statistical. So let's do a survey and see, you know, how many households are covered or not covered, rather than what I would almost call proactive monitoring, where you're trying to influence behavior sort of upstream by letting people know you're actually going to monitor after the fact what goes on.
There are loads more questions that people had for you, but the good news is that Robert is going to be doing office hours now for the next half hour, so you can find him in room 834 for if you want to carry on this conversation. And yeah, if you have a scroll through the questions, you'll find out the kinds of things that people were asking. Nice. It is now, so can you just join me in thanking Rob for an excellent talk.